And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3769 of the Survival Podcast. It's Wednesday. That usually means it's interview day, but as we're getting toward the end of the year, I tend to take a few weeks where I don't book interviews at all. And on a week where I have a first Tuesday show with John and Nicole, like I did this week, more likely than not that that's what I'm going to do. And so today is just Jack show, and we're going to do one of these lifestyle design and self-improvement type shows today. To me, that's very much a modern survival topic. If we can improve ourselves, then we improve our place in life, and we're more resilient and less brittle, and therefore we are more likely to survive and even thrive. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to ask a very difficult question today, and it'll make more sense when I get into exactly what I mean, but who are you becoming? And are you happy with that? Are you happy with that? Here's kind of the angle I'm coming from today. I'm working on my new book, and this is actually pulling a little bit out of two chapters I've recently finished. By the way, I'm down only three chapters, and Laws of Life 2 will be done. It's going to be a much quicker rollout than Laws of Life 1, and dare I say, a much better book, a little longer, better edited, better typeset. All the problems we had with the first edition of the first book will not be present in this one. But I mentioned something in something that I was working on today, and it kind of led to I'm just wondering what somebody's talking about here. Jack Santa Transmission is complete. He will eat sugar cookies and mad. Okay, they're talking about my beard. Okay, I mean, it's pretty weird. I was hoping there wasn't any kind of audio problems or anything. Anyway, I was working on this part of my book today, and I was talking about, you know, when people say they're working on themselves, and I mentioned how in the past. And this tends to be more common with women, but it's not only women. Men do the same thing. They just use different terminology. You say something like, are you seeing anybody right now? Or you got anything going on or whatever? They say something like, I've decided just to take some time to work on myself. And whenever somebody tells me something like that, I always say, well, that's awesome. That's great. What do you mean? What do you mean? And generally speaking, what they mean is, I don't want to talk about this thing because I'm not doing shit with my life right now. And I know I'm not doing shit with my life right now, so I'm making up bullshit. Because they get a deer in the headlight look. And you say, well, what do you mean? What does that look like for you working on yourself? Are you journaling every day? Or are you reading books? Are you taking a course? Like, are you, if you're working on yourself, and that means I'm not being involved with other people, or I'm not pursuing my career, or whatever that means to you right now. What is working on yourself mean? And I would say in all the times that I've had that said to me or versions of it said to me, and I've asked that question, maybe one in 20 have an answer that actually involves working on themselves, meaning 19 out of 20 do not, meaning roughly 95% of people when they say they're working on themselves, or 98% of people when they say they're working on themselves, are not. They're not working on themselves. They're not doing anything. That's code for I'm not doing shit. Right. That's like when somebody tells you when they break up with you, it's not you, it's me. Right. That means it's you. Right. We're just supposed to know this and intuit this. But I've always used this as an opportunity to pull on that thread a little bit, because I think most people actually would be well suited to do some work on themselves. And if you really do have kind of this lull in your life, there's a couple things. One, you can use that lull to actually work on yourself. And two, a lull usually is a rut, and there's no better way to get out of a rut than to move. If you sit still, you won't get out of the rut. In fact, the rut will get bigger while you sink your ass deep down into it. We're going to talk about some things today, like what happens if you wake up every day and you commit to and execute the following program. I will make myself 0.5% better as a person today than I was when I woke up. What does that look like over a year? What does it look like over 10 years? What does it look like if you say, I can't, that's too much, you're asking too much, Jack. I can do 0.25%. What's that look like over a year or 10 years? Oh, you suck so bad, the best you can do is 0.1% of improvement of yourself every day. What does that look like over 1 year and 10 years? The answer to all three of those is astronomical. I'm almost afraid to tell you what the answer is for 10 years, that 0.5% per day of self-improvement. And we're going to hit another reality on this. if you don't consciously do that, you're going the other direction. So I've said for years, life's not a sliding scale. Either you're moving forward or life pushes you backwards. And that also compounds, like compounding interest. We're going to talk about how your past, no matter how many mistakes or how much darkness is in it, is your greatest asset if you choose to make it one, and how much you're wasting if you don't, and how if you don't do it, it becomes your greatest liability, an anchor that holds you down. We'll talk about how to know if you're a leader. Are you a leader? And if you're actually successful, you probably are a leader, at least in some way. We'll talk about how we should judge leaders. We're going to talk about the fact that you either become more than you currently are, or you go into terminal decline. We're going to talk about a weird thing, something that happened on the day that you were born with everybody around you that cared about you anyway, and how that actually was a summit, and it was downhill from there. And then it came back up a little bit. It never got back to there, and then it plateaued. And then how you did the same thing to yourself somewhere in the middle of your childhood. I don't know exactly what age you were, but I guarantee you it happened. When I say childhood, that could be anywhere between, like, you're old enough to talk and wipe your own ass up till about 18, 19, 20. I'll call all of that being a kid at this point with this big old white beard of mine. And then we're going to talk about something. I'm going to give you a leak from the new book. One of the things that changed the new book is each chapter, this is another version of Laws of Life, new laws, 16 new laws. I came up with a way to end each chapter instead of just doing the mental code rewrites that I blended into the first book. Each book or each chapter in the book this round ends with first a formula that you can use to apply the law in your life. You can run that, you know, pick one law a day and run that formula in your mind and improve yourself. And then after the formula is what's called a distill, which is basically the cliff notes, the highest, like the 10 bullet points of the most important things in the chapter, and then the code rewrites. What I'm going to leak to you is chapter 12's formula, and it's called the Forge formula, and how you can use your past to be more sharp and tempered today than you ever thought possible. And a very simple 5-step formula. All of that's coming in just a minute. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, Anton and Biltong USA. Anton is an amazing dude. He's from South Africa. He makes Biltong the South African way because by being from South Africa, he actually knows what that means. And he's got some amazing Biltong and other products like the dried sausages and what. But I wanted you guys to know, especially right now, heading into the holiday season, and, you know, like Hickory Farms with their garbage crap is doing pop-ups here and there at little malls and shit. You know, the store that was Halloween U.S. Halloween store, whatever it's called, Spooky or whatever. Like, now it's a Hickory Farms. Hey, check this out if you're on the video, man. There's a lot of cool shit from South Africa and from all around the world that you can get at BiltongUSA.com. He's got more than just the Biltong. When you're shopping for Biltong, though, I would encourage you to check out something called Stix, STIX. There's several different versions of them available. They're instead of the like kind of the prosciutto like biltong that you might be familiar with, they're more like little thin strips and they're dried hard. And I do not like picking them up and just biting on them. I take a pair of kitchen shears and cut them into little bite-sized niblets and throw them in a bowl and snack on those, especially if you're keto carnivore. Boys and girls, what a great way to make something good last longer. Because I don't know about you, but when it comes to the regular biltong, I eat that stuff like candy, man, straight down and gone. Next up today, what about investing in your own future or the future for your kids? JM Bullion is a great way to do that. Silver and gold are hard assets that hold value over time. And I would like to remind you guys, I haven't talked about this in a long time, but a lot of you guys have kids in your life, either kids, grandkids, nephews and nieces, friends of the family where the kids are kind of like part of your family. Maybe they call you uncle so-and-so or aunt so-and-so, even though you're not, you know, actually related. And you know, you're looking for something to buy these kids for Christmas. Buy them some cool silver rounds, maybe one or two a year. I did this even for my grandkids. I got them both little cases, like a little treasure chest for Braylon and a little case for Tegan. And we give them some silver every once in a while and have them put them in there with other things they really value. This is a great way to get that mindset of investing in early. Or if you're stacking for yourself, JM Bullion. Let's see, why would you buy from JM Bullion? Number one, sponsored the show since 2013. And number two, your order's going to ship free. Number three, you're going to get better pricing than Monex, Apmex, Lear Capital, et cetera. Number four, I can talk directly to the owner of the company if there's a problem at any time. And number five, why would you buy anywhere else? Because I forgot what I was going to say. Anyway, JM Bullion is a great company. Oh, you get a discount if you're an MSB member and you're buying larger volumes of silver and gold. So just, you know, when you're thinking about silver and gold, remember, again, it can be small amounts that are gifts for those kiddos, or it can be large amounts that you're stacking for a legacy. And we're going to be talking about things today from a standpoint of, are you building a legacy? Because I honestly don't believe that most people do leave legacies behind. I think most people leave bills behind. And you know, a way to leave a legacy is not only about money. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that that is one way. And a legacy is something that 10 years after you're gone, will people still feel you? Not just remember you, but feel you in some way. Have things in their life that when they touch it, they'll go, oh, yeah, Grandpa. Yeah. Or realize that my life's actually better because of Grandpa or Grandma or Great-Grandpa or Great-Grandma. Or maybe even if you really do it right, you hit that seventh generation. That great-great-great-grandchild knows who you are. It's a lot to shoot for. It's a high bar thinking that far out, but it's worth doing. So let's start out with what I was saying in the intro that I want to cover with you today. I want you to go back. I know you can't remember it unless you're like, I guess there's one or two people in the world that claim they can, right? But I want you to go back to the day that you were born. A mental experiment here. And I want you to think about the fact that there were all these adults in your family that were like, oh my God, he or she is here. The day has come. Your mother held you to her chest and she loved you in ways that you can't even comprehend. And your father was so proud. And your grandparents maybe were there, or somebody sent them a picture and like, oh my God, little so-and-so is here. There was something that also happened on the day that you were not privy to because you were busy like being a baby that can't function and even hold your head up yet and was barely capable of intentionally shitting your pants. It just kind of happens after you have your first meal. But the expectations others had for your potential were at a zenith. They were probably the highest they ever were at any point in your life from other people. In that it wasn't even like, I'm not saying like maybe you're not somebody that like your parents didn't really believe in you or your grandparents didn't really believe in you, but as you became a person, instead of just being a tiny human, you actually began to develop a personality and demonstrate capabilities and find things you loved. They began to actually narrow what success would look like for you. But the day you were born, this young child can be anything. So when I say expectation, I don't mean like the parent that overdrives, that's like, Billy, that's not what we do. I expect more of you. Like, I don't mean that. I mean just the mental image of what success could be for you. This baby could be the next president of the United States. This baby could be the next great entrepreneur. This baby could grow up and cure cancer. I mean like that. And even when it's not said, that's what's in the heart, the mind, and the soul of the parent, the grandparent, the aunt, the uncle, looking at this newly formed baby because it hasn't done anything yet, and therefore the possibilities are unlimited. And then, you know, at that point, you can't even hold your head up. Like, literally, the first time you hold your head up is an accomplishment. The first time you roll over is an accomplishment. As you develop into a being that's actually capable of doing things, walking, talking, getting your teeth, eating solid food, eventually learning to read and write. And by the time you're 12, 14 years old, all of a sudden the expectations of what you're capable of have actually come down. And you're now capable of less, even though you could do 1,000 times more than the day you were born. That's a weird thing. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody say that. I'm not going to claim I'm the originator of that thought. But that thought has come to me in the work that I'm doing right now in writing this new book and getting up early and doing all the things that I'm doing in my life for my own personal improvement. Like, I kind of hit on that. But I realized something else. There's always these mirrors that occur. We mirror what our parents and our teachers and our influencers apply to us in ourselves. You see, when you were that little baby, you didn't have limitless potential in your mind. You actually only saw, like, literally infancy. If you take your two hands up and put them up like blinders on a horse, and then you turn them this way so they go out, that's about all a newborn sees. They don't see any peripheral vision. They only focus on what's a couple feet in front of their face or closer. Their brain is not developed yet, and literally the brain itself has certain things going on that are blocking out inputs because the sensory input would be an overload for a new baby. It would send them straight into a seizure, basically. Too much data, too fast. The mind is not developed enough yet to handle it. So you weren't there. You were just, right? Okay. As you grew up, you developed something called imagination. Okay. You found imagination and you started visualizing who you could be someday, what you could become someday. And somewhere probably between about 10 years of age and 20 years of age, maybe a couple years older, you reached the pinnacle of what you thought you could achieve someday. And it was all downhill from there for most people. They stopped believing in that level. And that probably happened over time in this way. You're in your mid-20s, you're getting your first good job, and you're starting to build a life. You're thinking someday I'll be even higher. But when you're in your 30s, early 40s, all of a sudden you think, well, I guess this is it. And it's a weird thing that that arc matches the parent, the uncle, the grandparent, that arc of baby to young adult, and then that young adult to adult. The life arc projection matches. And it really shouldn't be that way. Because when you were 10 and you believe that one day I'll be able to X, right? And at 22, you can do so much more than you've moved in that direction. And yet the doubt creeps in. The resignment to this is now, there's different types of resignment. There is, you know what? I thought that would make me happy. I don't think that shit would make me happy now. If that's true, then you find a new life arc, but it still should be a limitless potential. Unfortunately, that's not what we do. By the time you're able to do all the things necessary to take care of yourself, those expectations were lower from the people who held you up like baby Simba in the freaking Lion King on the day you were born. You did everything right, and their expectations dropped, and the mirror in yourself dropped as well. At some point, though, as we grow up, we have to accept something. Either we become more than we currently are, or we start to become less than we currently are. You really can't stay static in life. You really can't. There's no way to do it. Life will push you backwards. Everything that you do, every skill that you develop has some form of what we call muscle memory. It's really intellectual memory. It's brain memory. Your hand has no memory. If I cut your hand off, it can't do anything without your brain. So we call it muscle memory. When we learn to do something like twirl a quarter over the back of our hand, that little trick, I have never learned to do that, but you know what I'm talking about. You see people can do it where the quarter just goes around and back around and back around. Like, that's not muscle memory. We call it that. It's we've learned from experience how to manipulate the muscle to do that, or the tendon or the bones or whatever we're doing, right? But if we stop doing something long enough, our skill level declines. Our muscle memory declines. They say if you ride a bike, you never forget how to ride a bike. I agree with that. Like, I have never seen, if you could ride a bike and now you can't, you either had a traumatic brain injury or you've become so old you can't do it anymore. But I can tell you this, what I could do on a bike when I was 16 would fucking kill me today. Well, that's because you're old. Yeah, I'm old. I'll admit it, but it's not so much because I'm old. It's because I quit doing it. Like when I was a 16-year-old kid, I was from about 8 to 16, I was on a bike every day. Doing all kinds of crazy BMX shit, building ramps, jumping over my friends, you know, riding wheelies, riding endo wheelies, right? Dude, I get all the shit. I couldn't do any of that shit today because I quit doing it. So the skill level will decline. This doesn't matter where you're at. Like a surgeon who stops doing surgeries, their surgical skill level will decline. If you learn to type and you get really good at typing, and then you don't type for like 5 years, you'll still be able to type, but you won't be at the level you were when you quit. There is nothing in your life that'll change from. Thinking, just actually deep thought, when you stop doing it and forming new synapses, then your ability to go into deep thought mode declines. Meditation. If you get really good at meditating where you can truly center yourself and find peace, and you stop doing it for a long enough time, you'll still know what to do. You might even be able to guide somebody else into it, but you won't be as skilled a practitioner. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't care what it is. Have you ever, if you are a, there's a perfect example right there from Lisa, speaking a foreign language. I speak Spanish fairly well. I really do, but I don't speak it as good as I used to because I don't live in a place where everybody talks Spanish anymore. I lived in Panama for 2 years. I learned more Panama for 2 years and Honduras for 6 months. I learned more fluency in Spanish than 2 years of studying in high school. And I had a good Spanish teacher. I'm not going to say nothing bad about him. He was a good teacher. Can't even think of his name right now, but I can see it was ginger bowl haircut dude with a beard. He was a pretty cool guy, actually. But I didn't really learn Spanish until I had to practice it and use it. And today, like, I'll listen to Spanish, and if I hear one word I don't know and I fixate on it, I lose the rest of the sentence. But, like, when we travel and we go somewhere where people speak Spanish, within about a week, I'm not where I was at my best, but I'm way back up just by doing it. So if you want to continue to grow, you have to do the things that you want to grow in. Or you will not only not grow in them, you will decline in them. And that means overall, if you're not doing it in some areas of your life, as a person, that when you like judge the quality of a man or a woman, you will decline in quality as a person if you are not working on actively becoming a better you, no matter what it is you want to do with that you. This is hard for some people to accept. It really is. And the number one objection to it, when you're really positive or you talk about achieving great things or whatever, is, but you don't understand my past. Now, a lot of you that are hearing me today, you've listened to me a long time and you know what kind of bullshit that I'm going to say that is to that person, because you know enough about my past to go, yeah, I'm not sure I'd want Jack's past. Like some of the stuff he learned and all coming up. Yeah, that might be like, if you really look at you, like when you were 16, did you have to pay rent because you moved out of your house because your parents were crazy? Both of them? No, then shut up. Like that's the real shit. And I'm not going to go into it because I actually have talked more about my past than I probably even needed to, because I'm going to tell you something. Where I grew up, it was just a hard place to grow up, and no one there has my story. But boy, there's a lot of people with many similar stories. There's a lot of people, they didn't move out when they were kids. They might as well. What they had was a free place to stay because their parents weren't involved in their lives at all. And I don't mean the normal Gen X stuff. I just mean that, like, it was a place with people quit for multiple generations. School County, Pennsylvania, a lot of people quit. They really did. They went out and got jobs. They took care of their family, whatever, but they quit improving themselves. So they went into decline. And today, I bet you half the county's on welfare of some form or another. Probably more. I bet you half of the county has people of working age that don't work at all. Half of the people in the county are working age and don't work. I'll bet on that. They have money because they're getting it from the government or some sort of other program or something like that. But, and I'm not picking on the place. I'm just saying that's the way it is. So why talk about how hard it was for me when it was the same for everybody else? But that past, the mistakes and failures of your past are actually your most valuable assets, yet most people waste them. The mistakes you made are part of you. They're scars that you earned, and they are pains that you suffered through and endured and somehow came out the other side of still there. And instead of saying, I had this happen, and I'm going to learn from it, and I'm going to use it, and I'm going to harness it, it becomes an excuse. well, the reason I have not achieved all those great dreams I had and all those great dreams that my parents or grandparents had for me is because my past was so bad that it set me back and I never recovered. I'm sorry. That's bullshit. And I'm going to say another thing about that. If having a negative past, a hard past, of having things happen to you that were bad, if hitting rock bottom and having to come back from drug use is so bad, if being arrested and put in jail for a while is so bad, if growing up with being poor and having nothing is so bad, if all of those things are so bad, everything like them is so bad, it's such a reason for failure. If that's the case, then why do so many people get fucking caught lying about their past, not to the positive, but to the negative? When Ben Carson was running for president, he had released his autobiography, right? Turned out he had actually written a bunch of shit up and then handed it off to a ghostwriter who then turned it into a book. And that was the excuse used here. But he wrote several things in the book about himself, like, he was kind of a little thug and he tried to stab his friend. And the reason that he didn't end up in prison over it is it broke on the friend's belt buckle, which makes no sense at all, by the way. And several other incidents that it turned out none of that shit ever happened. But he wrote his past as being much darker than it was. Amy Klobuchar, during her debate, claimed that she had to wear bread bags on her feet because she was so poor. And it turned out Jody Ernst, Klobuchar, a Democrat, a Republican named Jody Ernst, in her Senate campaign spouted the same shit. It turned out that that was just a Midwestern thing that happened at the time. That's like rich people did it, poor people did it. It was a workaround. It's wet outside. You put the bags over your boots when you go to the bus, and then your fucking shoes aren't wet. There was nothing hard about it. It was a normal everyday thing. And you could think of all of this shit, you know? There was a guy, I can't remember his name now, but he became a best-selling author because Oprah Winfrey read his book, and it was so inspiring, and she made it the Oprah Book Club book. And then she had to have him back on and, tore the shit out of him because the whole thing was fabricated, right? And I can keep going. I probably have 10 examples in the book of people that it did this. So if it's so terrible to have a hard past, why does everybody marketing themselves as an amazing achiever claim they have a hard past? And I'm going to get to some reasons why I think that's the case. But I want to talk about what a mistake it is for you to bury the mistakes of your past or to rewrite the negative things into positive things to impress people or to convince yourself it never really happened or whatever. I want you to imagine you are a CEO of a company. Great big company, something in the tech sector. Doesn't matter exactly what. And you're running a company that's like $1 billion-plus a year company. And you decide that your company needs a data center, a big badass data center, amazing data center. Something when you walk into some lines and lines and lines and lines of computers, fiber optic cable going everywhere, including out of the building. Just this massive data center, something you could run a AI unit with. So you finance and build the data center, and you're funding the payments on all the construction costs that you borrowed from the company's revenue, and you have your data center now, and it's capable of all these amazing things. Yeah. And you now do nothing with the data center. You just leave it sit there. You pay for it to be maintained, because it has to be maintained. Sometimes cards have to be swapped out on computers because they don't work. I mean, you keep it operational. The electric bill on it alone is, per month is more than the average person's annualized salary. Just the electric bill is 10 times the average salary for $1 million a year paying or $1 million a month you're paying on electricity, maybe to run something like that, or $1 million a year at least. Right? That's what you're doing. Are you wasting something that's an asset? Okay, then check this shit out. Inside your bone skull, right, there's a little lump of fat, weighs about 3 pounds. It can hold more information than that data center. We don't have any appreciation for how powerful our brains are. I did the math, and the autonomous things your brain does, like running things down to the cellular level of every cell in your body, it's about 250,000,000,000 processes a minute. You can't even get your head around it. It really can't actually get a number. I went to AI with this, and like, it's impossible to actually figure it out. We're talking about, you know, not just your breathing, but all your cellular process. All the things that your brain runs without you even thinking about it would require more than a data center to do just that for one person because of the sheer quantity of the individual processes, even the simple ones. Remember I talked about rolling the quarter across your fingers? How many computers do you think it would take to store the data necessary for the dexterity to do that one thing? See, everything you've made, how much database would be necessary to store the guy that learned how to play 20 songs, just 20 songs on a guitar? All of the dexterity, not just the song, every movement, right? Every movement. And to have the knowledge to vary things, like I want to draw this one note because I'm playing to a different group. Like, sure, we can program a robot to just do just the movements. It's still a massive amount of data. But to program the robot to do it and to change it with heart and soul, we can't even do it. But if we could, that about it. And then think of all the things that a normal person can do. Walk, brush your teeth, type. Think, come up with ideas that you didn't know you had, discover ideas, right? That's a massive amount of data in your brain. That's what I'm trying to get at. Every human's walking around with a fucking data center. Science cannot explain how the brain can store the amount of volume of data it can inside 3 pounds. We can't build something that mimics that. Okay, so you know what else is in that brain? All the bad shit. And we learn more from our mistakes than our successes. If you're an athlete and you have game films, you don't be like, oh, look at me score. Not if you want to get better. You're like, even though I scored on that play, that guy almost got me because I made one mistake. But I was able to power through it because of the talent that I've developed. But if that guy was a little bit better, I'd have been down on the one, end of the game, we would have lost. So even when it's a victory, there's an error to find. Now think about the actual errors, the ones that really fucked up. When you said something to somebody and it hurt them, and to this day you can remember that person and see their face, you can't even find them to apologize. You're going to forget that ever happened. You're going to try to delete that file. By the way, there's no deletion of the files unless somebody like actually scrambles your brain in a bad way, like, you know, a Men in Black light or something, some sort of traumatic brain. In fact, even then, it's kind of still there. We just don't know how to get to it. In fact, most of the data we have in our brains, we can't get to. The only reason computers and search engines and things like that look so much smarter than people is because of the file structure and the ability to recover the data on a query. Humans are way smarter than machines. Machines are just better able to access what they have as far as a knowledge base. That's the difference. That's the difference. So you're wasting what is the most valuable asset you have, which is all the data that is all your mistakes, all your failures, and all your victories that came through hard, that weren't just easy, that they were just handed to you. Like, what people remember is crossing the line in the marathon, and they forget how hard they had to work to get there. And then that becomes a pinnacle. And then you judge yourself in the future because you can't do it anymore. And you forget how you were able to do it in the first place. It's just a squandering of an asset. And the other side of this, though, is the reason that people embellish hardship when marketing themselves is, one, it makes a more interesting story. Like, have you ever read a book that we thought, this is a fantastic novel? Bill met Sally. Sally and Bill lived happily ever after. Even if it's a long story, but if everything is, you know, just sixes and sevens in it, as the Brits would say, right? Right? Or sunshines and roses, it's boring. It's also not real. Noah's life is like that. Fairy tales end with happily ever after because they're fairy tales. But they also only get to that point by going through a crucible. And part of this is that we intrinsically knows something. Heat and stress harden steel. Right? Here's how we actually harden steel, if you don't know. You heat steel to a very high temperature until the molecules in it literally restructure themselves. It's called austenitizing. And then when that steel is screaming hot, this is actually a very violent process from a metal and chemical stance, right? You take the super hot steel and you quench it, oil or some sort of brine or something like that. And this, that new organizational structure in the metal that makes it harder, it sets permanently that way. If you just let it cool back down, it'll revert to how it was before you did it. So we have to heat it up, and then we have to quench it. And then it has to be heated a second time, but nowhere near as hot. Because if we don't, then it's very hard, but it's like glass, and it'll break. It'll chip. So we heat, quench, and temper. And the universe has a weird way of having patterns that transcend areas. It goes from one place to the next, right? And what that means is that if you see it somewhere, you'll probably see it somewhere else, even though it doesn't even look the same. This is the same process by which humans are improved and we get a sharper edge ourselves and are able to hold our edge. Is that we must go through the crucible. We have to go through the heat, the pain. We have to come off of that, but we can never then say, well, I'm not ever doing it again. Like, that was hard and I made it and I'm good now. No, then we have to be tempered. And we have to endure time to time to time, maybe not as much heat as the first one, but some heat. And then we have to work on our edge and we have to re-sharpen the edge. No knife, no matter how good the steel, will stay sharp forever if you don't use it, or unless you just don't use it. And with humans, we don't have the option of not using it. And here's the funny thing. Even a knife that's not used will eventually get rusty and its performance will degrade simply because it's not used if it's not maintained. It has to be used and or maintained to remain what it is. An airplane. I said, you see this everywhere. Airplanes have to fly or they die. You take an airplane that's completely serviceable, put it on the ground for 10 years and do nothing to it, and it will degrade to the point where it will be unflyable if it's not maintained and flown. This pattern repeats and repeats and repeats. So we have to be challenging ourselves to become more or become less. It's a non-optional thing. And then I want to say you should never worry about if you would trade your hard past, nor should you want to. I get this question a lot. Like, if you could go back and tell your younger self one thing that do differently, what would it be? I don't know if it's 10 years, buy more Bitcoin, maybe. But if we're talking about like the coming up years, the hard years, the childhood years and everything, like, I don't even know if I'd want to go back and be like, bro, it's me. I'm from your future. I just want you to know it's all worth it. When you get there, it's going to be amazing. That seems like a nice sentiment. But I just wonder, would that lazy fucking kid that was in me, that was fighting with the ambitious kid, would he be like, oh, it's going to work out? Okay, cool. Right? No. Like, I would never want to take that away. But if you trade, if you're even spending time, you know, thinking about, what if I had done it differently? You're wasting the data center that you built. There's no point. You can't unring a bell, right? You can't unwhistle a whistle. You can't unknow a thing. You can't unsay a statement. You can't go back in time and not punch somebody in the face you shouldn't have punched in the face. You cannot go back in time and study for the test you didn't study for. You can't go back in time and prepare for the interview you didn't prepare for. You control only now and the future. And now will be the past that quick. You control this second right now and you don't anymore. It's already gone. You control this hour for the next 60 minutes and then it's gone. You control this day until the sun goes down and you go to sleep, and then it's gone. What you do now will affect tomorrow, but what you do tomorrow will never affect today. We cannot go retroactively. So every minute we spend lamenting the past without purpose is wasted. That's the complete opposite of just ignoring it and not worrying about it. What I'm saying is to retain connection, extrapolate from, and do better because of the flaws in your past. Otherwise, again, you've built a giant data center, this 3-pound brain. You fucking suffered. You hurt. You hurt others. You made mistakes. You went through shit. Maybe you're still going through shit, but you went through shit. You earned it. It's yours. You're entitled to all of the things that can be leveraged because of it. Don't turn away from it, but don't let it hold you back. Don't let it be an excuse, and don't let it be an anchor, and don't let it be baggage. Let it be fucking fuel. Fuel on your fire that never goes out. Burn like that eternal flame for the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Never let it go out until your last day. And if you do that, then you burn on somewhere else. That's legacy. That's what this is really all about. And if you're doing great things, I promise you, you're leading. If you're really making a difference in the world, you're leading others. And all you have to do, and this might be metaphorical in the way that you do it, is turn around and look. If people are following you and your example, you're leading. And then the next question will be, am I worthy of being these people's leader? I promise you, if you're a parent, you're leading. You could be leading poorly, though, right? If you see your children doing things that you know they got from you and you really wish they wouldn't have done that, you're leading in the wrong direction. If your people at work trust you, but you're not actually building them up, you're leading in the wrong direction. But here's the funny thing. You can be a leader in two different ways. You'll be a leader of your children as long as you stick around, and you'll be a leader of the people they place under you at work because they have to follow. They have to listen to you. They were given that assignment. If you're in the military, you get promoted. The people that are lower ranked than you in your unit, you will be their leader in some way, some form. Doesn't mean you'll be a good leader. You'll be their leader. But real leaders, true leaders, they lead people that they never sought to lead. They lead people who do not have to follow them. Great leaders can be defined by the quality of the people that they attract. Hopefully, they then build them up from there and make them even better. But great leaders attract people who might even just be better than they are from the very beginning, but there's something in their leadership. There's something in their determination. So the person following them may be better at a thing or a skill set than they are, but they don't have the ability to dedicate themselves that leader does. And so when you look back and you see who's following you, it's a great gauge on whether or not you're a good leader. And if somebody's leading you, this is a metaphor, but when you look at them, more often than not, are you looking at their face as they command you what to do? Or are you looking at their back as you follow them into battle? There's no question who the better leader is. The person who drives may be a good commander, but they're not a great leader. It's not commander, it's leadership. Leadership is the person who demonstrates and therefore is followed. If you work on that as part of your self-improvement, I have no one to lead. Lead your fucking self. Lead yourself. Become your own parent. That's part of growing up. Have you ever thought about that? I've said many times, the purpose of a parent is to work themselves out of a job. You'll always be their parent, right? You'll always be their dad or their mom, but at some point you have to stop being daddy or mommy, right? Daddy ties your shoes for you. Dad says, boy, why aren't your shoes on? You see what I'm saying? Daddy says, I know you can do it. Dad says, good job. I knew you could do it. And that means that a young person has to actually go through a transformation to become their own leader and therefore in some ways their own parent. They fill that role. Dad doesn't say go to bed on time. You go to bed on time because you have to work tomorrow or you have to try out for the team tomorrow, whatever it is. That is assuming that role. So when you are like, but I don't have anybody to lead yet. Yeah, I'm the lowest man on a totem pole at work. I don't have a lot of friends. I'm not married. I don't have a family. I have friends, but not in that kind of dynamic. Maybe need some new friends. Because in a good group of friends, everybody's leading everybody. Because everybody is offering something to the group that everybody else would like to be a little bit more like. Right? But even if you're not there yet, lead yourself. You lead yourself long enough, other people will follow you. It's almost like we wrote that right into the theme song of the show, what, 15 years ago, when Greg Yasnov wrote the theme song for the show. Make your own way, and the others will follow. So, never, ever set your sights too low. Your goals should scare you. If you don't question your, at least your long-term goals, like your short-term goals should be more like SMART goals. So your long-term goal is, you know, I want to do this thing. And then you start breaking it down. Okay, I've got 20 years to accomplish this thing. Maybe it's become a millionaire. Well, then you know in the next 30 days, the next year, the next 2 years, the next five, these are the metrics I have to hit along the way. Those short-term goals really shouldn't scare you that much. You might be like, I don't know if I want to suffer through to get it, but it's doable. That's the whole point. But the long-term goal, you should feel a little bit overwhelmed, like, oh, shit, I don't know if I can do that, or your sights are set too low. And when you set your sights too low, you're doing a great disservice to yourself, your family, your friends, and the world as a whole. Because you have incredible potential built inside of you. Every single one of us does. You probably know people in real life, not people you see on TV or read a book by or whatever, or see on the internet. You probably know some people in real life. You're like, that is an amazing person. They're not better than you intrinsically. They're better than you in practice. And they got better in practice, through direct, focused intent to become better. To ask themselves the question, who am I becoming? Do I like it? And if not, what do I change? So the answer becomes, yes, I do. Very much, I love who I'm becoming. And I'm working hard to become, because we get one shot through this life. We really have no time to waste at all. So I want to ask you a question. And I want you to think to yourself, kind of talked about this in the intro. Would it be that you would be setting a ridiculously too high of a bar by saying to yourself, not necessarily every day in one thing, and maybe I'll work on one thing for a week and then another thing, or maybe I'll work on one thing for a month and then I'll work on another thing for a month and then something for a week. But I just will make a commitment to myself right now that I am going to improve myself as a person by 0.5% every day. Does that sound like, you know, something you cannot do? I was going to say 1% when I was putting the show together. And I'm like, you know, that's a lot in a year, right? That's a lot in a year. So is 0.5%. But I mean, that 1% is actually a pretty big leap and it compounds really fast. I'm like, I don't think you're asking too much to be 0.5% better. Putting in perspective, if the maximum amount of pushups you could do was 10, and you'd always failed at 10, then the next day you're going to do 10.5, and the day after that you're going to do 11. And you're going to keep going until you can't progress anymore. Plateau for a while and work on it till you do. And certainly, when you hear where the numbers work out to, you will hit a point where unless you're setting world records, you're done. That's all you can do. But then maybe you can break it up into multiple sets, or then you can do something else. Like normally I read 5 pages a day, and I'm going to read 5 in, what, a tenth? I'm going to keep doing it till I get to 6 pages a day of learning or whatever it is. So something in your life, something every day, we're going to figure out how to be 0.5% better. Does anybody here think that's a ridiculous thing to target? That that's just too much? There's no fucking way you can get 0.5% better at one thing in your life every day. Okay, fine. 0.25%? Can you give me that? Right? Can you do a 0.25% improvement per day? If you can't do that, I'll meet you as far as I'm willing to go down, 0.1%, 0.1% per day. Surely you can do that. Let's look at some numbers here. If you were to improve yourself 0.5% per day for a full year, the ROI on that year, expressed as a percentage, is not 365%, which a lot of people would think. Because the 1% compounds. You went up 1% today, so now the next day you're going up like 1.01% or something, right? Okay. 517%. You improved by 517% simply by improving yourself as a person at 0.5% per day, every day of your life. Well, I'm not ready for that. I'll do 0.25%. 1 year, that's still 149% better as a person, as a well-rounded, full human being, 149%. Is that worth doing? Is it worth making a commitment? I will do the things that I think will make myself just 0.25% better every day. And the compounding is as hard as you think, because as you get better, you're better able to improve. It's a continuous process. What about the person that was such a, like, I can't, 0.1%. That's still 44%. Yeah, you're 44%. You're almost 50% better than you were at the beginning of the year. Anybody can do that. Anybody can do that. And you're doing it in something already. If every day you sit down and type, you're getting a little bit better at typing every day until you hit your absolute pinnacle. If you take out the trash as a janitor, you get a little bit better. Like, whatever it is you spend your time doing, you're getting better at. So you better think about what you're doing. It's telling people to fuck off on social media. You're getting better at that, but is it worth getting better at? Right? If it's binging TV, you're getting better at binging TV. So all I'm saying is redirect where you're getting better. But this is where it gets crazy. I'm going to go reverse order here. 0.1% improves you by 44% over a year. What do you think the improvement over a decade is at 0.1% per day for 10 years of concerted effort? I will be at least that much better every day. 3,740%. What? 3,740%. This is where it starts to get stupid and you start questioning the math. I ran the math 4 times to be sure. Okay? 0.25%, 149% a year, over 10 years, continuing to compound at 0.25% a day, 900,000% and change, 900,000. I've checked the math, but you know the meme? Where like the brain is like not lit up, then it's lit up, and then like it's like, okay. Anybody want to guess what the ROI is of 0.5%, which is 517% in a year, where it goes at 10 years of doing it consistently? Anybody want to guess? I'd love somebody to guess. I know there's some lag in the live stream here and all. And I want to get into the Forge formula and wrap this up. Oh, it's over 1 million. That's low. This is going to blow your freaking brains out. Literally. 100 plus K. No, not even close. I don't know what that means. 100,000? No. Like, 1 million is 2.5 million. No. Low ball. Low ball offer. I'm not taking 2.5 million. Low ball. Low ball offer. You're slumming. It's going to hurt your head. You're going to not believe me. You're going to go check it out. And you're going to find out I'm telling you this for 10 million. You're getting closer. You're still low as shit. Low bidder. Not taking the deal. I'm opening another suitcase on what was that show where you open the suitcases and try to beat the banker, right? 2 trillion. No, it's not that high. Okay. We went a little bit far. I'll give you the number. 80 million%. 80 freaking million percent. And somebody's out there saying right now, is that possible? And deal or no deal, that was it. Yeah, right. No, no deal, right? I'm not taking a deal. Okay. Mathematically, it's accurate. So I don't mean when they say, is that even possible? But can a person really improve themselves 80 million percent as a being? Does it fucking matter? Does it fucking matter? What if you fail by half? What if you fail by 90%? That's still 10 million percent better. Right? 3,000% is easily doable in 10 years if you're really working at it. I agree. 3,000%. 3,000% is 0.1% per day. Is that worth it? What? And there it is. Kevin's got it. What will the effort produce? Surely some of y'all can remember back in school where you had the kid that was pretty good runner, but they, you know, like in track, and they had him jumping the hurdles, and he just tipped like every other hurdle at competition height. So they just raised the hurdle like an inch higher than competition height that'll be run during the competition. And he tips them and tips them and tips them. And finally, he's only tipping like 1 out of 3. And they put it back down to the level that it's actually supposed to be at. And just like glass over it. When we stretch ourselves. Remember what I said? Like 80 million, that's not possible. I said if your long-term goal, and your 10 years might not be your life goal, but that's long-term. A decade is a long time. Ask anybody that's done a decade in prison. I'll tell you, it's a long fucking time, longer than you think. By the way, it was Seneca who said, it is not that we don't get long to live, it's that we waste so much of our lives. 900,000% in 10 years at a quarter point. I'll settle for 900,000%, but I'm going to shoot for 80 million because it's possible, because the numbers say so. So let's talk about the Forge formula. Now, I talked about how we harden steel, and the formula I came up for a chapter of the book, like I said, this is actually borrowed from 2 chapters. This is pieces of 2 chapters. But in the Forge formula, where we look back at that past and we look at it as that data center that we invested all this money into and we better value it, the formula that we came up with is Forge. And by Forge formula, I mean that each letter of the word Forge is like an acronym. It's for something. So F, the F in Forge is face the truth. Stop editing your past into a story that excuses you or makes you look better than you are. Look at it exactly as it was. Face all the good, all the bad, and even the boring wasted time. So when we look at our past, we often look at it and go, oh, I did these things that were bad and I did these things that were good. But we leave out some of the bad is I did nothing for like, you know, half of my existence in this period of time of my life, except staring at the wall and spacing out. I have nothing to show for it. So Forge, F, face the truth. Don't rewrite. Don't edit. Be dead honest. If not with others, with yourself, at least, for God's sakes. Oh, own the results. They're yours. Every outcome so far is yours. Ownership is the only place real change starts. Whatever role you played in any part of your past and every reaction to the things you didn't control is yours. Own them as the assets they really are. That includes the things that happened to you that you didn't. There was nothing you could have done to prevent it. You really were, quote unquote, victim in that situation. There was just nothing you could do to prevent it. And even your reaction to it, like for a time at least, it was the best you could do. Still own it. You still learned from it. You still fucking earned it. Own what you earned. R, refine the lesson. Strip the emotions that block the lessons. The, oh, I don't want to, that's too hard. Or, oh, that hurt too much. Or, oh, it wasn't really that bad because you're trying to temper it. Strip the emotions. That doesn't mean that the emotions go away. It means that you don't let them block accurate recall of where you come from. Okay. And then extract the insights buried in them and discard the things that weigh you down. Get rid of the baggage. So take only the lesson without the emotion. Discard the baggage, the things that, because the bad happened, that means I can't, no, fuck that. That's baggage. That shit you need to throw off your car. It's like you're driving a car. You got bald tires on. You can't afford new tires yet, but you got to get to work. You have a whole bunch of shit in the car that doesn't belong in the car. Throw the shit out of the car. Now the car goes down the road. You get to work. You make some money, put some better tires on the car. Pretty soon you're doing really good. You can buy a new car, not just new tires. So ditch the baggage. Okay. The bad baggage can be a roadmap. Make the right choice. You can have that. It just like the bad is baggage. It's just weight, or it's a roadmap of how to get to where you're supposed to go. The choice is yours. Make the right choice. So there's your R. G, grow the edge. Grow the edge. Turn each lesson into present and future judgment. Build strength and capability that you can actually use from your past suffering, from your past failures, from your past victories too, from all of it. Be empowered by your failures and your successes. If you're still here after whatever it is that you think was so bad, you must be pretty badass to have made it this far. The successes prove that you can win. The failures guide you to better choices today and tomorrow. That's growing your edge. And then E, execute forward. Apply what you learned immediately. Like when you, this is a formula to run, not just, you know, maybe once a month or something, like just going through it in your head. Like literally whenever you get to a point where you're like, I don't want to do this because I did this thing before and it hurt. And you run this formula and then it gives you direction. Maybe I don't want to do it. Maybe because when I did it before, the reason it hurt is it was stupid. But what does that say I should do now? What is my execution now that I've run the process? This is the output, like a computer input. And then the last letter is the output. It's the result, right? So now we need to immediately do the thing that the past results dictate that we need to do before we stall out and use that as an excuse to not do it at all. None of this means anything. None of this means anything unless you act on it. A computer can learn these large language models and shit like that, but a human can do. They're very different things. Get busy executing as every second you sit idle is a waste of your most precious commodity, which is time. It's the one thing you can never get back. You can lose your Bitcoin. You can work really hard and get it back. You can lose your money. You can work really hard and get it back. You can lose a relationship. You can work really hard, and as long as you didn't damage it too much, you can restore it, or you can find a new relationship if you have to. Almost everything you can get back. The two things you can't get back are if somebody that's in your life that you care about dies and all that's left is their memory. We can't bridge that gap. We don't know how. Right? We can't do that. But that's really back to one thing you really can't get back was time. Because what you miss is your time with them, not the fact that they're there. So the real one thing you can never get back is time. So every second wasted doing something that was negative to getting what you want is gone, like a fart in the wind. So when you do know what needs to be done, then you need to execute that immediately, including when the answer is do nothing. Because sometimes the best lessons in the past are not when to act and how to act, but when to not act, when to do nothing. When to say, you know what? this is not a time for me to do anything at all. Leave that other party, leave that other person, leave that other thing alone and go do something more productive. Or the last time you did this, you messed it up. But the reason you messed it up is because you did this thing. So now go fix it and leave this particular thing out. When you explain it to the person, be more clear. When you work on something, you know, put a jack stand under it, whatever it is. Like, I don't care. It doesn't matter what it is. But you should be able to look at anything in front of you, look at what happened in the past, and come up with a determination of what needs to be done, including walk away. And the minute you know the right thing to do, assuming the timing is correct for the application, do it. Do it. And you do it in the right sequence too, right? Like, there's times where, like, doing a thing can save your life or save somebody else's life, but doing it in the wrong order will kill both of you. So we have to always temper with, you know, common sense and knowledge and correct procedure. But once you know what to do, act. Don't sit around going, I know what I should do. You're wasting every second that you spend doing that. You know, my final thoughts today are, this is a different show than we've done in a while. But it's the kind of show I probably should do more often. Because in the end, what is the point of survival if your life isn't wonderful? And if your life isn't headed somewhere good? If you think about every person that ever commits the absolute most tragic thing I think a person can do to themselves, which is suicide, in all instances, it's because they decided that today was miserable and there would be no point in the future where anything got better. That's the point where even the most logical person will consider taking their own life. The terminally ill patient, who knows, I've got a week. I've got a week. And breathing is like glass in my lungs. And it will only get worse. I have no lack of understanding for how that person would at least consider, if not actually choose, to end their life early. I know there's some ethical concerns there and things like that, but I understand the person's viewpoint. But tragically, there's so many people that they get to that point in their head, but the reality is nothing like it. When we make a commitment that we are going to make our life better, we will. One of the things I've added to my life since the workshop is I get up very early every morning. And I've been reading several different books on morning processes and morning routines and stuff like that. And the first one was actually a terrible book, but the concept was good. It's called The 5 a.m. Club. But I'm reading another one now. I'm actually read another one called Miracle Morning. It's pretty interesting. And both of them have stuff in it that I just, you know, I don't know if they'll ever be on the reading list in and of themselves. I'm kind of developing my own method for this. But in that second one, The Miracle Morning, there's a point where the guy that wrote it, he talks about how do you get out of bed first thing in the morning and actually get out of bed? And just do it, right? And 5 a.m. is an interesting number, but really for most people what it is about is adding an hour to your day and then doing something focused with it. But in his book, he said something I thought was really interesting. I'm like, well, that's easy enough to try. He said, the last thing you should think before you lay down to go to bed is, I can't wait to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be great. I'm going to get 7 hours of sleep, and that's going to be plenty. I'm going to be well-rested. I'm going to get up. And he's like, if you do that, the funny thing that will happen is when you wake up, the first thing you will think is, I'm going to get up. I had a great night's sleep. I'm ready to go do something. I'm excited about it. He said, think about any time you had to get up early to go do something you really wanted to do. Like when you're a kid and you're going on an early morning fishing trip, you're like, boing, Christmas morning, boing, up out of the bed, right? That mindset works. I'm here to tell you it works. It changes the way you think, and it really does become the first thing you think of when you get up. But like all things, swords can cut both directions. What does that mean if the last thoughts you have before you go to bed are negative? It's what you're going to dream on and ruminate on in your sleep, and it's going to be in your mind when you wake up. Have you ever had like an argument or a fight or something like that? And like the last thing you thought was you were mad about it or upset about it or sad about it. And not only did you sleep poorly, when you woke up, it was the first thing at the front of your mind. I realized something after doing this. That's always been the case. The last thing you think of is generally the first thing you think of. So there's your bonus today. Whatever it is you want to wake up focused on and thinking about, make it the last thought in your evening, and you'll be very, very surprised by the results. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Like I said, I know it was a little bit different than typical. Lots of great comments. We have a great showing up in the live feed for how many people are here today. And the number kept going up. It never went down. So I must have been hitting on something good. I wanted to give you this. At this time of year, because we are in the wind down. We're in the wind down. And I'm going to be honest, I will start coasting next week a little bit. Okay. I will, because I have, and I've talked about this for 17 years now. I came up in the telecommunications space and I worked in like central offices and data centers and stuff like that. That's why I like to use analogies like that, because they're in my past. And there's just something about that industry that in general, especially when you're a contractor, like right before Christmas, they say, see ya. And you don't get your contractor, no PTO, no time off, no, just buy. And you'll come back around the 3rd of January, somewhere in that range. So just shut down and just buy, get out of here. And it sucks when you get paid by the hour and all, but usually you have a lot of overtime leading up to that. And it's just, but then you go spend like, and you're traveling and you're working hard, you're working long hours, and then you just spend that like 2 weeks with your family. So when I came out of that space, I didn't have to do that anymore. I made a conscious decision that's what I was going to do. And I do it every year. It's like this big reboot. It's like turning the Jack computer off and back on again, but you back up, right? And I think everybody could benefit from doing versions of that at times. So since I know I'm going into shutdown, I start to actually wind down a little bit. And before I did, I wanted to hit you with something incredibly powerful for yourself. And I want you to start thinking this way now, not on January 1st of the New Year's resolution. It's the worst time because, as I said, I think it was last week or the week before when I talked about starting now, you give yourself an out, you give yourself an excuse to not do it leading up to it. And then it's kind of a thing, and then it's just a fad, and then it just goes away. And that's why January 3rd, you go to the gym and there's like every Stairmaster, every treadmill, every bike, every machine, the freaking step class is freaking full. The aerobics class is full. All the weight benches are full. Dudes are waiting in line to get on the bench. Walk in there on January 30th. I mean, if I was the guy that was a gym bro and I hit the gym every day, I would just take like the first 2 weeks of January and go do something else. I'd use it for like cross training or something. Go out and jog or something, you know, work out at home. I just wouldn't go. Because I know that surge is going to go right through. Don't let that be you. Start something to make yourself 0.1% better every day right now if you're not only doing it. Do that, and you're looking at 3,700% improvement in the next decade. Or don't do it, and you're looking at 3,700% decline. You don't get a choice. And whether or not it happens, you just get a choice in what direction you go. With that, if you like the show and the work that we do, one of the ways you can help us out is do your online shopping where starting at tspaz.com. TSPAZ, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day, I have not brought this around for a while, but it is one of the best-selling items of all time. It's a great prepper item. It's a great gift. It's got a lot of utility even during non-emergencies, right? It is the E-Tech City 4-pack of LED lanterns. These things are great. They run on 3 AA batteries each. You pop them in the bottom of the thing. You pull them up. The lights come on. You close them down. The lights go off. I have in my office and in several other rooms little hooks up in the ceiling. You can't even see them. I just painted them the same color as the roof. And when there's a power outage, before we even worry about everything else, we pull these things out, put them on the hook, pull them down. They light the whole freaking room up. How cool is that? They're great for kids. They're great for keep one in the trunk of the car. Camping, et cetera, and yeah, during emergencies are absolutely fantastic. Most people would appreciate them as a gift, even if they don't fancy themselves as preppers. You don't have to be a prepper to understand that the lights go out, right? These things are on sale right now. They were like $28 when they came out, and I first started listing them, they're on sale right now. It's a four pack for $25. It's like $25.17. It's about $6.25 a piece, and they come with batteries, which I think is pretty cool because if you price batteries, the real price is the equipment, right? You're not $10 off. So it's like $15 for four LED lanterns. And these things are bright. They work really, really good. Check them out if you haven't already. Pick these up. Like I said, one of the best selling items of all time. Make a great gift this time of year. And if you like this show, this particular show today, not the podcast overall, but this show today, man, you are going to love Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. And you're really going to like the second book. It's going to be so much better. We learn as we go. And the first time we do something, we're never as good as it the second time. But this book is still damn good. I plan once I get done with the second book to actually do a second edition of this book and improve it. I feel that the second book is so much better, I have to do that. But I still think this will be a fantastic book, and it will be the first edition, and you never know. It may be worth something to have a first edition someday. With that, I hope you guys did enjoy the show. I hope you guys are looking forward to the holidays as much as me. Tomorrow we'll have an expert counsel Q&A show, and then next week we'll do it all again. I should be revved up and fired up on Monday. Tomorrow night, J.R. Haley's coming by the house, and he'll spend the night here. And early in the morning, near the ass crack of dawn, we will load up in his truck, go pick up my buddy David, and we are heading down to Freeport, Texas. And we're going to do a couple of days of fishing and hanging out on the beach and eating good seafood and stuff like that down there. And I'm going to take a break and a recharge, like I talked about. Like, you are a battery, and batteries need maintenance and recharging. It's going to be kind of rainy and a little cold on Friday, and it'll be a better day Saturday. So I don't know how much we'll catch. I don't really care. I'm just looking forward to getting out and enjoying it. So I should be absolutely cranked on Monday. So tune in to see what that's like if you like today. Take care, guys, and again, I'll catch you tomorrow with that expert counsel show. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month.